supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and later on in the show, we're going to drag out a horse and beat it again. But this time, we're going to enlist an aid, advisors, everybody in the world, the Justice League of Gardening, to come in and explain why volcano mulching of trees is even worse for the poor plants than we've told you in the past. We'll prepare you for that pounding with a heaping helping of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Carrie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being had, Carrie. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Texarkana, Arkansas.
We're always happy to hear from our friends in Texarkana. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, my question is, I have rabbit fertilizer in my raised garden, and I put it around my fig tree, and my fig tree is going crazy, a lot of figs. My question is it too much to put too much rabbit fertilizer on?
Well, that's interesting. Now, do you raise rabbits, sir?
I have a lady who rents a building from me. She raised show rabbits.
Oh, very interesting. And does she, like, give you the rabbit poop as part of her rent as just a kind gesture? Did you know to seek this stuff out?
Yes. She leave it out there. If I don't get it, my chicken get it.
But it's easy to carry and transport. It's not nasty at all, right? It's nice and pelletized. It dries very quickly, right?
Yes. If I leave it in a plastic bag, tie the bag up, it's powerful, you know?
Yeah. So, and you have a fig tree, which in your part of the country doesn't need to be protected over winter, right?
It died down. I'll cut it back, and I make little bitty, I'll put the branches in the dirt in the wintertime, cover them up with a glass, and then in the springtime, I have a little baby fig tree I trade.
Yeah, and you have such a long season, you get figs from those babies.
I get 2 pounds every 3 days from three trees. And they are going crazy.
And you literally cut them down every winter?
Every other winter. I've been here for 5 years. The coldest part of the winter, I cut them back.
And is that just to keep them from getting too big for you to handle?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Now, rabbit fertilizer, as you point out, rabbit manure, is a little powerful when it's fresh. So I would recommend you not close up the bag. That you kind of put it in an open container and let it air out, let some of that nitrogen gas off. And then fig trees don't need a lot of food, so I would only give them a gentle feeding with the rabbit fertilizer. Again, early in the spring, just as they're really starting to take off their growth. But I'll tell you a little trick with any kind of granulated fertilizer, whether it's completely natural like this or it's something that was pelletized in a factory, it's going to be more available to the plants and you'll get more bang for your buck if you spread it onto the soil and then you cover it with more soil or compost. It kind of forces the nutrients to go down into the soil as opposed to being lost in the air.
Okay.
But it's a very well-balanced fertilizer. I'm not surprised at all that your figs are responding to it.
My garden is about 50 foot long, 30
right.
inches wide. I have 5 rows of garden raised boxes I made out of metal.
Excellent.
And I put that in there, and I turn it, and I have more tomatoes I knew what to do with.
And I'll tell you a secret. You want to stop weeding that garden?
I don't have no weeds in the garden. I put carpet down, and I put the doors on top of it. And then I fill it with my compost and some chicken manure, but it's too hot, and I turn it every 3 weeks.
In the beds or in your compost pile?
In my boxes.
Before you plant?
Yes.
Yeah. I wouldn't worry about turning it so much. I would leave what you have out there, because it's nice and loose now, I would just add some rabbit fertilizer, put some nice soil on top of that. And if you have chicken manure, I would save that for sweet corn. I wouldn't put the chicken manure near the tomatoes. That's going to make the plants get too big and could make the tomatoes taste a little watery.
Oh, okay. I did have rotten blot this year on my tomatoes.
You need to add calcium to the planting hole. Since you have access to chicken manure, do you have access to eggshells?
Oh, yes. I sell eggs, too.
Put the dried shells of a dozen tomatoes right into the planting hole. When you put your tomatoes in the ground, you'll never see blossom end rot again.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I listen to y'all show every week, and I love it.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. That's very nice of you.
Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thank you for making it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Barbara, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Barb. Where are you?
In New Hope, Pennsylvania.
Very good. What can we do for you?
I have a little 9x12 spot that had never had grass before, hard-packed dirt. So I filled it up, and I planted grass from seed, and I covered it with burlap. Seemed to be fine. Grass came in. It was lovely. And then at about 3 inches, it looked as though someone had actually poured salad plate-sized globs of dirty motor oil on my lawn.
Tell people it's stepping stones.
And, you know, I would have done that had you not spoken to someone about this rot from overwatering at night.
Yes.
So I figured that's what I had done, and I cleaned the area out, and I think that's going to be fine, I hope. But you've spoken quite a bit about feeding the grass in the fall, and I don't know what to use, how to use it, or when to do it.
Let's drop back a little bit. What time of year did you plant the lawn?
July.
Oh, so it had no chance whatsoever, Barb.
Really? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the only... You know, presumably it's a cool season lawn. It's Kentucky bluegrass or fescue or a mixture?
A mixture, yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, you planted it in the middle of summer, which is the absolute worst time. So your grass didn't have much of a chance. If you had looked at our website, if you had gone to our Garden Answers A to Z and read the article under N for new lawn, it would have told you to just wait another month until mid-August and put your lawn in then, and they're relatively bulletproof. But the burlap was a really bad idea. The watering in the evening was a really bad idea. So now that we're in the middle of fall, what does it look like out there now?
It looks great. The little patches that, you know, has a rot, they are gone. There was some seed underneath it. It's about 4 inches long,
mm-hmm.
and it's fine. I stopped watering it altogether because it was only a few weeks ago you spoke with an additional caller about that let it be for right now.
So right.
Now I feel with the information you've given me that I'm lucky to have anything at all. So what should I do now with 4 inches and counting?
Yeah, I think you lucked out because it was such a cool summer. If it would have been a hot summer, it would have burned up. But we didn't literally get any heat waves this summer. But it is nice and full, you say. And when you stopped watering in the evening, the disease went away.
It did, although I didn't make the connection until I heard your show.
Okay, good. And who cuts your lawn?
A Shetland pony has nibbled the lawn down to about 3 inches, but only once. It's only cut.
And are you going to get your pony back?
Pony lives here.
Oh, okay. You are now recreating the classic English lawn. A lot of those early lawns were maintained by sheep, so to speak. The grass fed the sheep, and the sheep cut the grass. Now, you just have to make sure with a horse eating the grass, which is perfectly normal, that you just use normal grass, right? You didn't buy special grass with any endophytes in it.
Oh, no. We are organic all day long. That's why we love your show so much.
Well, endophytes are not necessarily non-organic, But when they are incorporated into a lawn mix, they make the grass more resistant to insect attack. But it is not safe for grazing animals after that.
Right.
Normally, I would say just leave your clippings on the lawn. I'll put this as delicately as possible. Does your pony poop on the lawn?
That's right.
And you then rake it around, try to spread the wealth, so to speak?
Yes, yes.
I would leave that bad thing alone. I would let that pony get out there every time the grass is 4 to 4.5 inches high. Let him nibble a little bit. Let him do what comes naturally. And see how that works out for you over time.
Okay. Wow. I feel much better. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this and your show.
Well, thank you, Barb. You're beyond organic. You've closed the circle.
Well, I had a good teacher, Mike. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will once again have the honor of hosting the Empty Bowl Benefit Dinner for the Homeless at the Lutheran Theological Seminary in Chestnut Hill, PA. This year's event takes place on Wednesday evening, November 19th. You get to pick your own handmade bowl and eat all the soup you want while helping homeless families. Such a mitzvah! But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to say lots of bad things about mound mulching and to take lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible by Grand American Tours. In July of 2015, Mike McGrath will be hosting a Viking river cruise through the gardens of Provence. More at 800-423-0247 or grandamericantours.com. And by MoleZap and AntZap. Their OMRI-listed organic, child and pet-safe mole and ant mound eliminator are designed to leave no runoff or chemical residue. More at AntZap.com and MoleZap.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, I am sick and tired of telling people not to mound mulch up against the trunks of their trees. So I enlisted the aid of many experts, including the undertaker who gets to cut these things down and carry them away after their premature death, to tell you for me. In the meantime, lots of your fascinating phone calls about all kinds of topics at 1-888-346-9499. Robert, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, sir. How are you today?
I am just ducky, Robert. How are you?
I am great. Enjoying this weather. Getting ready for fall.
And where is Robert enjoying the weather?
I am in Edmond, Oklahoma, which is just on the north side of Oklahoma City, so central part of the country.
All right, so what can we do for you, sir?
Well, we recently bought a property. My wife grew up in Arizona in Payson. They lay claim to the largest grove of ponderosa pine trees on the planet.
Okay.
And we bought this property here in Edmond, 10 acres, that has about 30 pine trees on it that are all mature. They were planted by the previous owner about 18 years ago. And so they're kind of sprinkled around the property in clusters. And we fell in love with the property. The trees were a large part of it, plus the view. It's on a hill and so forth. And we're going to be building our house there. So we've been clearing the land of the cedar trees that have taken over and, you know, trying to get to these pines and get them revealed. And I worry, because of Arizona, I worry about the pine bark beetle. And if there's a way that, number one, can I tell if my trees have it? And then, number two, how can I prevent them from encroaching into these pine trees?
Okay, first of all, you tell me you're taking down cedar trees. Are you saving the wood?
We are saving some of the bigger ones because we're building our house and we want to use them as front porch posts and such.
And don't forget, cedar wood makes some of the best raised bed frames. You know, cedar is one of the classic rot-resistant woods. You know, red cedar, white cedar, and wonderfully aromatic, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, believe me, the trees will tell you if they have pine bark beetles. You may be able to see disturbances at the bark. You may be able to see bore holes. You may see sections of bark that come off easily. And if you do, you would then see the galleries underneath. The single most important thing you can do is not feed the trees and not mulch the trees. We're finding more and more evidence that people who pile mulch up against the base of trees weaken the trees so much that insects like the pine bark beetle and the Asian longhorn beetle are attracted to them. Insects are like burglars. They'll go up and down a line of homes and rattle the doors. And if a door's unlocked, they'll go inside.
Yeah.
But you're going to keep your door locked by keeping your trees healthy, which means making sure that you do a little bit of help with the soil because it's naturally alkaline. You want to make sure it drops back a little towards neutral for these trees to keep them nice and healthy. Talk to your extension service about what kind of pH the soil should be for the kind of pine trees you have, and then you can lower your naturally alkaline soil, which I'm sure you have, with peat moss and sulfur and other natural agents. I would avoid watering with your water supply as much as possible if, like a lot of other people in your area, your water is heavily alkaline.
Yes, it is.
So you are a classic candidate to build a cistern or some rain barrels, so you can give these trees as much rainwater as possible during the dry times, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Okay.
And then the other cheap and sleazy trick that I like is in the winter to hang suet feeders all over these trees.
What is that?
Suet is rendered meat. It's a type of bird food. You know, there's two basic types of bird food. There's the bird seed. And then you'll see these cages, these small metal cages with blocks of suet in it, which is rendered beef fat, rendered pork fat. And this is a very high energy food for birds that overwinter in cold climates. And we're talking chickadees, wrens, woodpeckers. And then in the spring, after you've kept these birds fat and happy and warm over the winter with your suet, soon as the weather warms up, you take down the suet feeders, and those birds are already living there. They're raising their family. They've put their children into the local schools, and they will stay around, and their job is to eat these insects as they try to attack your trees.
I got you. Okay.
And keep the trees as naturally healthy as possible. Don't dare give them tree spikes or fertilizers. I know you guys don't get nuts with wood mulch down there. If you're going to mulch with a little bit of pine straw, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But just try to give them the best growing conditions they can. And then, yes, bring in the birds and try to give them as much rainwater for their water as possible.
They've been pretty much unattended. The previous owners planted about 18 years ago from little saplings, and then shortly after they were first planted, the husband passed away, And so they've moved off the property, and it's been sitting there for almost 18 years. And so they've been naturally, taking care of themselves and self-watering. And they've done pretty well. They're all extremely tall. They're clustered together, which I think helps from the wind.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're just sprinkled all over the property, and we love them. So
that's yet another example of these trees can take much better care of themselves than we can take care of them.
Yes, you're exactly right. Yeah, they've done fine without us.
All right, Robert, good luck, sir.
I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Larry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, this is Larry Jackson.
Hello, Larry.
The question I have for you is on lilacs. We don't tend to get a lot of flowering on our lilac bushes. They're well over 15 years old, given to me by my late grandparents when we moved into our home and built our home. Every year I give them a little fertilizer in the spring and the fall and put a little lime on them.
Oh, Larry. First of all, where are these lilacs? What state are you in?
Western Maine, up in Auburn.
Oh, okay. Very good. Now, you say you're putting fertilizer and lime on this lilac?
Yes, and I tend to fertilize and lime them in the late fall and hope for the best in the spring. And we never tend to get a lot of flowers.
Oh, no, of course you wouldn't. Why are you doing this, and what kind of fertilizer are you using, and why in the name of God are you liming them?
Well, I was told to put lime on the lilacs from the old timers who gave me the plant.
Right.
And the type of fertilizer that I use is called Espoma.
Right.
And I'll drizzle some cups of that around the lilac bushes in the fall, and I'll scratch it in, and then I tend to blow some leaves around and kind of like cover it for the winter time.
Oh, you couldn't have more room for improvement.
Okay.
Let's say it's 3 o'clock in the morning and Larry is sound asleep. It's me. And we start shoving cheeseburgers down your throat. Is that good for you?
No, sir.
Just as you should not feed a dormant person, you should not feed a dormant plant. No plant should be fed in the fall, except cool season lawns in the north, because they're actually not going dormant. They're going into a good growth stage.
Mm-hmm.
Your lilac is going dormant. It can't use that food in any way, shape, or form. If you're really unlucky and you have really poor timing and you put that food down and then there's like a warm spell, you could force the lilac to come out of dormancy, which would use up a lot of its energy. But no way can any of these things be positive.
Mm-hmm.
And no more lime. And no more I've never fertilized my lilac.
Good to know.
And whole leaves are death to plants. Because
okay.
You're not shredding your leaves, right?
Well, I'm mowing them, but I blow them around it just to kind of cover them up a little bit.
Okay.
I think I'm protecting them from the frost. Maybe we get upwards of 3 feet of frost where I live. And the winters are 6 months long.
All mulch does is protect the surface of the soil from heaving and thawing over winter. And that's more important for things like spring bulbs, recently installed perennial stuff like that. And it can be death on a stick for plants to have whole leaves massed around their base, because those whole leaves mat down like a tarp and prevent the passage of air and water. So you're preventing any rainwater and melting snow from getting down and keeping the soil moist. If you must mulch the lilac, don't let any mulch touch the trunk and make sure the leaves are really well shredded. If you're not going to do that, don't do anything, because most lilacs do not get mulched. Now, is the base of this lilac clear of other plants? Does it have good airflow around it? And does it get good sun?
Gets great sun. I would say 3/4 of the day it gets sun, good airflow. There is an oak tree on the edge of the lilac patch, maybe 10, 12 inches in diameter.
Okay, but does the oak shade the lilac?
It does shade the lilac later part of the day.
When does that start?
Maybe, say, 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon until sunset.
But you swear it gets morning sun until then?
It gets decent morning sun, yes.
Okay.
Like around, well, I say maybe around 10 o'clock. So 10 to 3 or 4 good sun.
it is possible that it is not getting enough sun. Lilacs bloom best in full, unrestricted sun with no other plants impinging on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you do want to up your chances a little bit, go to a garden center, get a bag of rock phosphate. This is a mined mineral that's very strong in phosphorus. What you would do is you would put a half a cup to a cup of this around the base of the lilac and then cover it with compost or soil. You would do this now because it takes a long time for the phosphorus to become available in the soil. And okay. Your lilac's spring is already determined. The buds are already there. You're not doing anything really clever like pruning in the winter, are you?
No, I do. I do in the spring. I cut off the old flowers. Is that a good thing to do?
Yes, and so you are getting some flowers.
Yeah, every year it's a big mystery how many we're going to get. I'll count 5, 15. Good year is 21.
Okay, well,
it just bounces around.
That's a good sign. Stop feeding it in the fall. Give it that little bit of rock phosphate. This is just the once. Cover it with compost, and then in the spring, next spring, after it blooms, go ahead and take off all those dead flowers, do some light trimming, and anything you can do to get more sun to the plant will give you more flowers.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. All the advice is really welcome.
No more feeding of anything in the fall other than a lawn.
Okay, great.
All right. Good luck, Larry.
Thank you. Sorry for the bad connection. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Love yourself. Thanks.
1-888-346-9499. Donna, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi there, Mike. How are you?
I am just fine. Donna, how are you today?
Oh, wonderful, especially because it's so beautiful out here.
And where is Donna wonderful?
Avalon, New Jersey.
What can we do for Donna in Avalon?
Well, I'm calling back, Mike, just to let you know that I had called you 2 years ago to ask you how I could win the tomato contest here in Avalon.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and I was calling back to tell you that since I followed your instructions, I have won first prize every year.
Excellent, excellent. What did I tell you to do? What kind of tomatoes did you grow? And how pitiful was the competition?
The competition's not pitiful at all, actually. It's been going on with the same people for 25 years. And my husband and I grow our plants from seeds, which none of the other people do. And we do Supersonic, and we also do Brandywine. They're the two types that we grow. And then we grow Sweet Million Bells for, you know, the cherry tomatoes.
Just for the fresh eating.
Yeah.
And I'm
going to
guess that Brandywine won you the big tomato competition.
You are absolutely right. And let me tell you, they are still coming in. They're still beautiful, and they're still delicious.
And what did you change based on my advice?
Just about everything. First of all, you had recommended that we use eggshells when we plant each tomato plant, and that's what we did. And we put approximately 12 eggshells on the top of each plant when we planted it, put on our leaf mulch and topsoil. That's the soil mix that we use. And then on top of that, a little Osmocote and then some leaf mulch compost.
I wish you hadn't used the Osmocote. That was unnecessary. I think if you try it next year without that chemical fertilizer, you're going to find your tomatoes are just as big, but a lot more flavorful.
Very good information. All right, we'll try it.
One of the things that chemical fertilizers do is they force tomatoes to grow slightly larger, but it's all water weight.
Okay.
So sometimes you may get a slightly larger tomato, but the flavor will be greatly diluted. And especially where you are, so close to the ocean, so close to the tidal marshes, you should not be putting any chemical salts into your soil.
Okay, we will follow those directives.
But the calcium, how about the effect of the calcium?
Oh, it was phenomenal. I mean, you just cannot believe it. And, you know, we had been holding this contest, as I said to you, 25 years and never won, never. And I was so frustrated when I called you. I thought, well, let's try our last hope. And it's worked. And our tomatoes really are good.
Oh, yes. Calcium. And I put my eggshells right in the planting hole, right on top of the root ball.
Well, that's what we do.
Okay, good.
Right on top of the root ball. That's the first thing we put in, you know, after we put the root ball in. And, you know, our root balls are tiny because, as I said, we grow our own tomatoes from seed.
And obviously, as you found out, that prevents any kind of blossom end rot. It also helps the tomatoes develop more complex flavors.
All right. You know, this year, rather than just winning, we're going to have a really superior tomato.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We should always strive for the ethic of constant improvement. We are never done.
Well, that's the truth. That is absolutely the truth.
All right, Donna.
Well, anyway, thank you so much. It was your help was just phenomenal, and I've referred everyone to your radio show.
All right. Well, thank you, Donna. Thank you for that report.
All right.
Take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that PHS, the people who put on the famed Philadelphia Flower Show, and NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farmers Association, are teaming up to offer accreditation in organic lawn care. Yippee! This exciting course will run from December 8th through the 11th in Philadelphia. But don't go looking for how you can earn credits towards saving the planet at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with the final word on volcano mulching of trees and lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible by Grand American Tours. In July of 2015, Mike McGrath will be hosting a Viking river cruise through the gardens of Provence. More at 800-423-0247 or grandamericantours.com. And by MoleZap and AntZap. Their OMRI-listed organic, child and pet-safe mole and ant mound eliminator are designed to leave no runoff or chemical residue. More at AntZap.com and MoleZap.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week, where I will largely step aside and let four other horticultural experts beat you up about the foolish and deadly practice of mounding mulch up against trees. So get your gloves up, because it's coming up right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Lloyd, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good, Lloyd. How are you, sir?
Fine.
And where is Lloyd Fine?
Wayne, Pennsylvania.
Okay, just outside of the city. What can we do for you, sir?
Question I want to focus on is magnolia scale.
Okay.
I have a property that has some magnolia trees. They're pretty healthy. They bloom well. They survive the summer. The problem is that they get this scale on them, which becomes extremely pesty towards the later part of the summer with secretion and bees and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I've had dormant oil spray sprayed on it, on the trees. I've also had some systemic treatment to the root system. And
boo, just, hiss, boo.
Yeah, and I've listened to, you know, some of your other shows where, you know, the professionals tell you one thing, but I've gotten 15 different pieces of advice and kind of wanted to go to the resource of yourself to see if I could get some proper direction before this tree actually comes out of the ground, because it just we just can't get this stuff to go away.
Okay, so you're giving me two different images of this tree. In that you're saying, in terms of the canopy, it's nice and healthy, good leaves, good
yep.
flowering.
Yep.
But you're obsessed because there's these insects on the bark.
Yeah, the insects on the bark, they bite in, and then, you know, they produce the liquid, and the bees come around, so you're walking through like a swarm of bees.
Actually, probably, unfortunately, you're walking through a swarm of yellow jackets at the end
of
the season.
Yeah, it is yellow jackets, actually.
Right, so that's bad. And you did have the trees... multiple trees, right?
There are three magnolia trees. Two of them are infested, and one of them isn't. And I believe it must be a different variety because the color in the spring is different.
Okay, that's interesting. And you did have the infested trees sprayed with dormant oil in the wintertime.
Yeah, it was towards the wintertime and then early spring. I'm going to say like March, maybe.
Okay, well, you wouldn't use dormant oil in March. Horticultural oil, of which there are different degrees and thicknesses, just like motor oil. But let's back up a little bit.
Sure.
You say the trees leaf out nicely, they flower, so
yep.
we know they've got good sun, and I'm assuming they have protection from too much sun in the afternoon.
Yeah, we get some late sun. You know, it's pretty healthy most of the day, and then towards the later part of the afternoon we'll get shade. But it's
okay, that's like ideal. Do you feed these trees?
I have not, no.
Okay, are they mulched?
They are mulched, yep. It's in a development, and there is mulch, you know, close to the bark.
Okay.
You know, to the base of it.
So that's one of the reasons the trees are stressed. So do you have control over these trees?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Get out there and pull the mulch away from the bark until it's at least 6 inches to a foot away from the bark.
Okay.
Now, how deep is the mulch in the area around the tree?
You're probably looking at, I'd say, anywhere from 4 to 8 inches.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Okay. So that's your problem. No mulch should ever be deeper than 2 inches. You're actually smothering the root system. You are preventing any kind of air from getting to the root system of the plants. You're also preventing rainwater from getting to them. Rake it out until it's no deeper than 2 inches.
Sure.
And, you know, if you wind up having a giant pile of it, just leave it sit somewhere till it composts down. Is it at least regular mulch, or is it dyed like the color of a Burger King?
No, I'd have to say it's like a, you know, it's a dyed mulch. It's in a manicured development, and, you know, they come through as a crew and do many of the
You got to stop them. Some of these dyes are incredibly toxic. The
yep.
magnolias are sick and stressed, and these insects are attracted to stressed plants. And this, it sounds like you've got the crappiest mulch possible. Real problem in these developments. So get it out of there, rake it away, make any kind of deal you have to. But in the spring, I would literally get rid of all the dyed mulch. I would throw it away or give it to someone. And if you want a mulch with true shredded bark that's undyed, that's a natural color,
yep.
just a thin layer and not touching any of the plants. This over-mulching is like smoking in the 60s. Everybody does it, and it's always wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that alone will allow your plants to fight off these insects. You might want to hang some suet feeders in the trees over winter.
Yeah.
To get birds there. The birds will eat the young scale for you. And if yellow jackets show up at the end of next season, because it's a transition year, just go out and buy the simple traps they have in hardware stores and home centers and put a rotten peach in each one, and the yellow jackets will go in there instead.
Great. Well, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate your advice and love the show.
Thank you, Lloyd.
Have a great day.
1-888-346-9499. Jack, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. It's so great to talk with you. I've got a problem in Mullica Hill, New Jersey, in Gloucester County, southern New Jersey, and I don't know where to turn. I keep getting conflicting information from my hardware store and garden center and neighbors.
What's the problem?
I've got something that people are calling bag bugs. We have three beautiful evergreen-type trees on the side of our property that are just starting to get full.
Oh, okay. All right. What you have are caterpillars that are called bag worms.
That's it.
Anytime you have an agricultural pest that has the word worm as part of its common name, it's actually a caterpillar. Bag worms are very treacherous. They build little condos that look for all the world like pine cones. The most important thing you can do, even though this isn't a good time of year to be doing any trimming of trees, it's very important to go and prune off those pine cones.
Got it.
And you're probably going to have to prune into the branch a little bit to get those pine cones off.
I have removed some, but it's weird. They're almost like woven like silken. And they're wrapped around the branch.
That strap is like Spider-Man's webbing. It's as strong as steel, and it will girdle the branch.
Yes.
So you have to either get under it and cut it, or if you can't get it off, you have to cut just past it. But physical removal and destruction of the bags is great. That's the first step. Making sure that that webbing isn't there girdling the branches is step number two. Now, can you reach all the bags physically?
I was just going to tell you that the trees are about 15 feet tall. I can get most.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Get off the ones you can. You know, maybe get a harvest ladder. Get the other ones you can safely get. And really, quite honestly, you could wait until the dead of winter to do that pruning.
Okay.
You know, make sure you mark where you remove the bags so you can get those strands off. In the winter would be the ideal time, but you want to get it off before the tree starts growing again in the spring. And then over the winter, you want to find a good supply of what's called dipel thoracide or green step. What you're looking for is BT. Now, that stands for Bacillus thuringiensis, but you don't need to know that. Just the letters B for Bobby, T for Thomas. And BT is one of the oldest organic insecticides around. Beginning in the spring, when everything greens up, you're going to spray the tree with BT. Get a pressurized sprayer, you'll have no trouble getting to the top of the thing. And, you know, you want to talk to your extension agent in your area, find out when the worms, the caterpillars, emerge. Because any caterpillar that eats any sprayed part of the tree will then die with no harm to anything else. It doesn't harm birds, toads, you. It wouldn't even hurt a bird that ate a dying caterpillar. It's very specific.
Fantastic, because we live near a wetlands buffer on the back part of our yard.
I didn't
want anything that would hurt the stuff back there.
This is the safest thing you can use. It only affects caterpillars, and it only affects caterpillars that eat the sprayed plant part. So you won't even be hurting any caterpillars that would turn into butterflies.
Got it.
All right, but the BT and the hand removal is all you need to get rid of the bagworms, man.
Thank you so much, and I'll continue to listen. You keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week, which is called It's Time to Declare War on the Mulch Mounding of Trees. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started with our different take on this oh-too-frequent question.
Sure, Mike. Lori in Lawrenceville, New Jersey writes, I often see trees in my town and neighboring communities mulch to the hilt. 6 to 10 inches of mulch packed right up against the bark. The majority, if not all, of those trees are diseased, dying, or dead, yet the mound mulching practice continues to be rampant, even at the college where I work. Why do landscapers practice this very damaging type of mulching? How can information on proper mulching be disseminated to landscapers, homeowners, and other property owners so that more trees do not have to die from this senseless practice? Mike, you've been telling people not to mound mulch up against their trees for decades now, but we're getting more emails than ever from people frustrated by this practice. What more can you do?
How about recruiting a wide range of professionals to join me in condemning this practice and warning of its outcomes? First up, Andrew Bunting, plant curator at the famed Scott Arboretum of Swarthmore College, a very knowledgeable guy with an unusually wide range of experience as well, as he's also worked at the Chicago Botanic Garden, the Fairchild Tropical Garden, and botanical show places in England and New Zealand.
And I presume that none of those places mounded mulch up against their trees.
No, and Andrew explained that the Scott Arboretum has become so aware of this problem that when they mulch the ground around their trees, they actually glove up and physically move any mulch away from the trunk by hand, making sure that the beautiful and dramatic root flare of the tree is fully exposed.
Does he agree with your warnings about volcano mounds of mulch keeping the bark constantly moist, leading to rot and insect infestation?
Yeah. Matter of fact, his exact words were, quote, keeping moisture against the bark of a tree is guaranteed to shorten its life. And he added another danger caused by this mounded mulching that several other experts I spoke with mentioned as well. Tree roots will always seek out the easiest source of moisture. And when you pile mulch up against the bark of a tree, as opposed to spreading a light layer of mulch out to the edge of the drip line, it keeps that area right next to the tree super moist, which encourages advantageous roots to grow in a tight circle around and under the tree,
eventually girdling the tree and strangling it.
It also encourages roots to come straight up through the mulch instead of growing outward. Because they have very weak lateral roots, such trees dry out much more quickly, he explained. And these are the first trees to die during a drought. Carrie Wiles, a board member of the Pennsylvania Landscape and Nursery Association, the PLNA, expressed great frustration, quote, that this is even still an issue, and cites lack of education as the prime cause. Their organization and similar groups in other states offer certification and professional training programs designed to eliminate these kinds of bad practices.
But don't some homeowners want this kind of look?
Well, that's sure what we've been led to believe. But Brad Groff of River Valley Landscaping, a PLNA board member who actually does a lot of installation work, said, quote, I've never had a client ask me to do it. And he echoed Andrew Bunting's warning that these volcano mulch trees suffer from such pitiful outward root growth that they typically die during the first severe drought year.
And that's from an installer of trees.
Yeah, and now we'll finish up with one of the undertakers who has to deal with the tragic results. Steve Goen, an arborist with the International Bartlett Tree Expert Company. He reiterated the dangers of girdling, adventurous roots, and rotting of the bark, and flatly stated that, quote, improper mulching practices account for the vast majority of tree deaths we see.
More than insects like borers and all the diseases that keep cropping up?
Yep. He explained that pests and diseases often take the blame for the premature death of mounded trees, but that even when you can see evidence of such attacks, the attacks often occurred because that tree was first weakened by those volcano mounds of mulch.
That makes sense. You often point out that healthy plants are less attractive to pests and disease, so the opposite must also be true, that weakened trees make easy targets. So we have about a minute left. What can people do, and how exactly should a tree be mulched?
Well, the healthiest trees have a thin layer of mulch that's 1 to 2 inches deep, beginning about a foot away from the trunk and going out as far as the furthest branches reach. Steve Gowen from Bartlett explains that a healthy root system will often go out 2 to 3 times further than that underground. And using a light layer of mulch to keep weeds down and retain moisture in as wide a circle as possible around the tree will help support healthy lateral root growth, stabilize the tree, and prepare it for a long and happy life. And the answer to the other question, the way to stop it, is to stop it. Tree owners really need to learn to just say no. Well, that sure was a hopefully definitive list of reasons why no one, nowhere, no way, no how should be piling mulch up against the trunks of innocent trees. Now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail and print out copies to tape to all the imperiled trees in your area, hint, hint, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to mound mulch me if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org with one tiny simple provision.
Please tell us your location. Please, oh, please tell us where you live. We can't guess it. We don't know where you are. Please, please tell us.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org. where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer is Al Banks. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar are You Bet Your Garden's web page wonders. That is not web footed, that is web page wonders. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work every day at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our editor is Al Banks. Unmulched Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Peter the Magically Mulched Christian is our ace production assistant. Our hired hand, Matt Pudecki, spreads the mulch at my command. I'm beating a dead horse to try and save live trees, Mike McGrath, and I hope to see you and your properly mulched. How can you tell good compost from bad? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal the two simple tests that can tell you if you have black gold or black death, plus your fabulous phone calls.